About Mari, how much she had seen and learned and lived in her 20 years. I'd bet she was even well-versed in the mysterious, far corners of the continent. Kingdoms I knew nothing of, like Jade and Citrine. I shook my head. In just a few days, I've met people here who have seen and done so much more than me. It makes me feel like I've barely lived. Why didn't you leave? Fear. Constant and cloying fear that dripped down my neck like thick syrup each and every day. I had a lot of responsibilities. I couldn't, I said instead. That sounds like a load of shit to me. I stiffened. You're foul. I'm honest. My fingers pinched the bridge of my nose. Forget foul. This man was maddening. Never mind. I'm going to sleep. I made to crawl back to my corner, but he grasped between the bars and wrapped a strong hand around my bare ankle. His touch was firm enough to hold me in place, but gentle around the sensitive skin. A chill ran up my calf and settled between my legs. I shivered. Come on, bird. You've got no reason to lie to me. Why did you stay? Let go of me. He did so at once and without hesitation. I told you, my mother was ill, my sister was young, even before my brother had been sent off to fight in your king's war, someone had to help take care of them. He shook his head and an uncomfortable silence stretched between us, like a long and unending sea. And I had a person there that I cared about. The stranger's full brows quirked up in interest. I thought you said no men. Halden wasn't a man. He was Halden. I didn't need to explain myself to this stranger. I opened my mouth to say exactly that. But he just shook his head. Nah. I crossed my arms. What do you mean, nah? He shrugged. He wasn't much to you. What? You don't light up when you speak of him. You clearly never think of him. Try again. You're so dismissive. How could you possibly know that? Trust me, I know these things. His eyes bored into mine. Why did you stay? Ugh, enough already. What did it matter, anyway? I was scared. Of what? Of everything! I gestured wildly at the bars surrounding me, where I was held against my will in the most treacherous kingdom in Evendel. Look what happens when you take one step out of your tiny, suffocatingly safe life. Why did I feel so guilty saying it out loud?
Fair point, bird. Prison's not the ideal result of adventure. I'll give you that.
I laughed hard, drained and frustrated, and so, so tired. I heard a grunt from a cell farther back and quieted myself. All right, so maybe I traded one prison for another. I will say, at least I'm constantly learning here. There are herbs and medicines in that apothecary I've never even heard of, let alone seen in person.
Your positivity baffles me.
I lifted a brow in question.
The way you look at things, it's just...
His hand disappeared in his dark locks.
Refreshing.
I considered him. Perfect dark hair curling over his forehead and down at the base of his neck. The tiniest bit of scruff along a jawline that rivaled jutting cliffs. Those clear slate eyes. My heart was thrumming.
What?
He said with a roguish grin. No, not the teeth. The full smile was arresting. It was uncanny, seeing someone so stunning, so clearly powerful, so dangerous, share something as intimate as a smile. Knowing any attempt at a lie would be abysmal, I tried to cover with something honest. Just trying to understand you. His smile faded, and he lifted his eyes to the ceiling in thought. Then he stood abruptly.
Time for me to go.
He tried for lighthearted.
I promised you no trouble, right?
I nodded, but struggled to find words. He turned back to me before leaving.
Keep your chin up, Bird. You're not alone here.
Well, I will be, when you finally finish whatever it is that keeps you hanging around Shadowhold. I sounded so pathetic, my toes curled inside my shoes. But he just regarded me with those shining eyes and an elegant smile.
I don't see that happening anytime soon.
And with that, he slipped down the passageway like a shadow and up the stairs into the night. I almost felt bad. I hadn't told him that even if he was planning on staying here, I wasn't. I curled up in the corner. The journey ahead of me would be more dangerous and unpleasant than anything I had ever experienced. And that was if I even made it out tonight alive. I rolled to my side and wound myself into a ball, wishing I didn't feel so afraid. 8. I awoke with a start at the bells that chimed midnight. It was now or never. My mind was still bathed in the fog of restless sleep, but adrenaline pumped steadily through my veins, forcing me up to my feet. Wrapping myself in the stranger's fox fur cloak, I tied my long hair back in a loose braid and made sure the pack was secured tightly to my hip. I didn't need anything getting in my way if I had to run from something or someone. I opened my cell door with a creak and swept my attention over the hallway dotted by crumbs of light from flickering lanterns, eerily silent and empty, as always. I tiptoed down the corridor and toward the spiral stairs. When I reached the bottom, I braced myself with a deep breath. It was a terrible plan, the worst plan anyone had ever tried in the history of the continent. I had no faith in it whatsoever, but it was all I had. One more deep breath, then, "Help!" I yelped upward. My stomach threatened to crawl into my throat. I fisted and released my hands. Silence stretched through the night. "Hello? Help!" I yelled again. A few grumbles from fellow prisoners, irked by the jarring disruption to their sleep. But nothing else. I called out one last time and then sprinted up the stairs until I reached the slatted wooden door of the dungeon. I held myself to the wall behind it and tried not to breathe. I waited and waited. So long it felt like years were passing by. My lungs were burning. My heart racing like the wings of a hummingbird. I waited until the door pushed open, pinning me to the stone wall, and a guard, still bleary with sleep, sauntered right past me and down the stairs. No air in or out of my lungs. None.
"Oi, shut up, whoever you are,"
he called down. Once he cleared a full spiral, I slipped out and hurried into the night, never stopping to catch my breath. The castle was frozen in a deep and silent slumber. I sped along the same path I had taken that first night I arrived, through the field, alongside the soldiers' painted camps. I wished I had known about Jame earlier. Once out of my cell, this wasn't as hard as I thought it might be. If Jame successfully got me through the Shadow Woods to Willow Ridge, I might just... Voices rang into the night, and I froze. But it was just a few soldiers telling stories into the late hours beside dying, dancing firelight. My chest caved in with relief, and I kept moving, blanketed by darkness and staying close to the tents to keep out of sight. I carefully edged through mazes of sleeping soldiers, my back flush against canvas, peering around each corner before I turned. My slippers squashed in the cold, wet mud. I winced as icy water soaked between my toes. Finally, I spied James' cart pulling up at the end of the dirt road ahead of me. His horse nickered softly, and I could just make out a wagon filled with dried meats and pelts. If I sprinted now, I would make it to the cart right before James reached the main gates of the keep. I took a step forward, and a tin cup clanged beneath my foot.
I silently cursed men and their inability to pick up after themselves, and looked around for any sign that someone had heard. When nobody came for me, I puffed out a breath and turned to make my sprint for the wagon, and ran face first into a large, sweaty body. Bert. Just as surprised to see me in his camp as I was to see him. My heart thumped loudly in my eardrums as his disbelief warped into sinister delight. "Look what I found. Little magic girl out here all on her own," he hissed. "All the coin in Evendale says you aren't supposed to be out of your cell in the middle of the night." My throat constricted with a silent scream. I wouldn't be able to reach the shears in my pack in time. Even if I could, I wasn't sure I had the strength, mentally or physically, to plunge them into his heart, his neck. But I could outrun him. He was inebriated and wearing a heavy suit of armor, and I was fast, even faster with fear on my side. But if I ran, would he call after me and alert all the other sleeping soldiers? I didn't like my odds of outrunning hundreds of Onyx men. "You're wrong," I said, mustering false courage. "The king knows I'm here." Bert let loose a low rumble of a laugh, but his smile didn't reach his eyes. Something in my gut shifted, souring my stomach. I suddenly knew with absolute certainty that I should run. I turned on my heel just as I felt his rough hand grip around my elbow.
"Then I'll take you right to him," he said, more to himself, hauling me backward.
My entire body shook so hard I thought I'd vomit. I had to get away from him. Before he brought me into his tent, I had to
let go of me.
I hated how shrill my voice sounded, how scared. I tried to pry his fingers off my arm, but he only grasped tighter, his nails digging into my skin and drawing blood.
"I am a prisoner of the king."
A sinister laugh slithered out of him.
"Exactly. Prisoner. What is it you think that means?"
"Let me go right now," I demanded.
But my words were a strangled wheeze, and tears pricked at my eyes.
"Let me go or I'll scream."
"Be my guest,"
he whispered up against my ear, his breath hot and stale.
"You think you'd be the first?"
I didn't let my shock keep me silent for long. I would have rather been caught and spend the rest of my life in that dungeon than experience whatever it was Bert had planned for me. I sucked in a deep breath to call for help, but Bert clamped his meaty hand over my mouth and held it tight. I tried to shove him away, off of me, gagging with fear and disgust and nausea, but he was so much stronger than me. I thrashed and bit, straining for breath, but he dragged me farther toward his tent.
"If your mouth feels this good on my palm, I can't wait until you're on your knees. Magic girl with a magic mouth."
Tears had begun to pour down my cheeks in earnest. I choked on a single, mangled sob. He took us to the opening of his tent, and I could see the pallet and pelts inside. My stomach roiled. "No, no, no." I struggled, pushed, and writhed, anything to get away. I couldn't go in there. He couldn't make me do this. I wouldn't let him.
"What the fuck is going on here?"
growled a low voice behind us, cold as death and just as violent. Bert spun us to face the man, but I already knew who would be standing there. I knew his voice like my own by now.
"No."
The word fell from my mouth. Bert would surely kill him. The prisoner's familiar, towering frame, blazing silver eyes, and a more mercenary expression than I had ever seen stared back at us. Fury simmered in his gaze. Fury and the promise of death. But he didn't move to draw a sword or rush the lieutenant. Instead, for no reason at all, Bert released me, and I fell unceremoniously to the ground. Confusion rang through my chest alongside my relief, my heartbeat still pounding with residual adrenaline. Bert stumbled and arched a bow before the stranger. My hammering heart stopped cold. Why would...
"My king,"
Bert sputtered, face aimed at the dirt beneath him. My vision tunneled, until all I could see was the prisoner standing before me. The weight of realization like a boulder on my chest, crushing, horrifying. No air. I had no air. I wasn't breathing. His gray eyes didn't meet my gaping stare. They were too busy, too focused, flickering with white-hot rage, like burning liquid silver, directed at the hunched lieutenant. I could feel Bert wobble beside me, trying in vain to hold his bow. A cold rush of humiliation flooded my veins as I took one small inhale.
You?
The word came out far too hoarse. I cleared my throat.
You're King Kane Ravenwood? How?
Questions later. The king bit out, but his seething tone wasn't directed at me. I watched from the mud as he stalked forward, like shadow death incarnate, and put both his hands on Bert's still bowed shoulders, kneeing him in the face with so much force it reverberated through the ground beneath me. With a wet crunch, Bert flew backward and landed with a sickening thud. He moaned in agony, his nose clearly shattered at a hideous angle, lip busted, and one eye already swelling shut. I thought I might have even seen the moonlight glint off a few teeth in the wet grass. For once, I felt no inclination to heal. The king crouched over him and spoke so quietly it was almost a whisper, a sinister sigh alongside the night's fog.
You disgusting piece of filth, a festering blemish in my army and among men. You will regret every single step that led you to this moment. You will pray for death.
Bert just groaned and then fell back into the grass, unconscious. The king stood up, brushed some mud from his knees, and turned to face me. His expression was a careful mask of calm, as if he knew that if he either softened toward me or revealed the depths of his rage, I might fall into hysterics. And he would be right. I was mortified and sick with fear. I couldn't form a single coherent thought around the resounding roar of betrayal whirring through my ears. A handful of soldiers had heard the commotion. They rushed out of their tents, some with glinting metal swords at the ready, others sleep-addled and still pulling on pants, but each one bowed when they saw their king.
"Take this sack of shit to the dungeons," he said to them, "and tell Commander Griffin."
King Ravenwood nodded toward Bert's mangled face.
"I want him to suffer."
The soldiers didn't hesitate, picking Bert up from the muddy ground and carrying him off toward the castle as he moaned. The rest of them stood by, ready for further orders from their king. Their king.
"As you were."
His words sent the men scattering back into their tents and left us alone beneath the shining night sky. Horror swirled in my gut, like blood and water, as I regarded King Ravenwood. He took a tentative step forward and offered me his hand. His eyes still burned like ice. I stared at his palm before pushing myself up off the grass without his help. My breathing had gone so shallow, and I was shaking in awkward, jarring spasms. I didn't want to be touched by anyone at this moment, least of all him. The king flexed his outstretched hand and pocketed it as if he didn't know what else to do with the appendage.
"Are you all right?"
Was I all right? No. I wiped the cool, drying tears from my face. King Ravenwood looked physically pained as his eyes followed my hands on my cheeks.
"I swear he will not live to touch another woman."
Emotions warred inside my heart. Shame at how I had so easily been played for a fool, fury at his betrayal and toward his twisted lieutenant, how close he had come to hurting me, and terror, such terror of the wicked king of legend who stood before me, I thought I might faint. Fury, the easiest to grasp and harness in my mind, won out, and I glared at him. He rubbed a hand down his face, like a long-suffering children's teacher. "Arwen."
I made a noise that was somewhere between a scoff and a gasp. I had to get out of here. Right now.
But Jame was long gone, so my feet began to carry me back toward the castle. The gorgeous deceiver followed me closely. He looped in front of me, and I stopped short. Our chests were a single breath apart, and I cowered back from his broad form, from the wicked, predatory power that seeped from him.
I was going to tell you.
He surveyed me from head to toe, seemingly checking for injury. What would he do to me now that I had tried to escape? He must have seen the horror on my face, because a bitter smile replaced his frown.
I'm not going to torture you for your failed attempt to run, though that would be fitting of the merciless king you think I am.
Thank you, I whispered dumbly.
King Ravenwood pressed his lips into a thin line.
I need to know if you're all right, he said firmly. Did he hurt you?
It was like the words were blades in his mouth.
Why were you chained up in your own dungeon? I asked.
It was all I could force out. His jaw clenched.
I had to talk to someone down there, and not as myself.
I remembered the hushed argument that first night, the husk of a man that had been brought back to his cell this evening.
Are you hurt?
His words punched through clenched teeth.
No, I said, lower than a whisper.
He nodded, eyes softening with relief.
Why continue to lie to me in the infirmary?
His brows furrowed.
Maybe you wouldn't have healed me if you knew who I was, all I had taken from you.
I would have, but I wondered if he knew that, if that was another one of his many lies. I didn't know why I even bothered to ask. It wasn't like I could trust a word he said. Alongside my fear, searing humiliation funneled through me. I had allowed a monster to lie to me, deceive me, and coax some of my deepest truths from my lips. It had all been a nasty, dirty trick. The red haze of anger that veiled my vision intensified. I was weak and stupid, first with Bert, and now with King Ravenwood.
Are you really going to kill him? I asked.
The king's jaw tightened.
Yes, I am going to kill him.
Of course. I looked down, but my tone had conveyed my disgust.
You are impossible. I just saved you from a fucking rapist. Now you judge me for how I wish to punish him for hurting you?
He was your own corrupt lieutenant.
I bit my tongue. I was too angry to be near him. I would say something that would get me killed too.
Yes, and that will haunt me for a long time, Arwen. I had no idea who he was.
He sighed.
They should have told me. My men, about him. I don't know why they didn't.
Maybe the other kingdoms aren't the only ones who fear the Onyx King. His eyebrows creased together as he looked down at me, and I wondered if it was shame that played across his face. Whatever it was, it hardened into something cruel and cold, and glinting with intrigue.
And what about you, Bird?
I stayed silent. He was too smug. I knew where this was going. He leaned against the wall beside us. The corner of his mouth perked up just slightly.
Do you fear me?
His teeth gleamed like a wolf's in the moonlight.
Yes.
I wouldn't be able to lie convincingly. I knew my fear was written plainly on my face.
Good. Maybe then you'll listen when I ask you to do something for me.
My stomach heaved at the thought of what he might ask. He must have seen the revulsion on my face because a muscle in his jaw ticked.
No, nothing like that, Bird. I wouldn't say you're exactly my type.
My face flushed with the sting of his words.
I had warned you that escape would be dangerous, yet you tried anyway. I know you wish to return to your family, but I ask that you stay here in Shadowhold and continue your work as a healer. Consider it payment for your brother's debt.
I hadn't been expecting that. It had dawned on me a day or two ago
that there were far fewer people in need of healing here than I expected. If the king was so desperate for my healing abilities, wouldn't I have been more useful on the front lines? I had more patients back in Abington. Why do you want me to stay here? You don't even have many patients.
Perhaps I am intrigued by your particular skills.
My face flushed. I didn't want to be his trophy, to be kept here like one of the jarred creatures in the apothecary.
And in return for your commitment to Onyx, I will find your family and make sure they are safe, he added,
like the only thing that mattered to me in this world was simply an afterthought. I knew I couldn't trust him, but the relief at the thought of their safety was like a cold gulp of water filling my chest. The king would have the resources to find them. Spies and messengers, a dragon to cross the seas faster than 1,000 ships. He could probably track them down in mere weeks, while it might take me years. A lifetime, even.
Maybe he knew I'd always keep trying to run unless he bribed me otherwise.
How do I know you'll keep your word? My voice had gained a semblance of strength.
Humor danced in his eyes as he ran a hand through his tousled dark hair. I realize how this sounds, but you may just have to trust me.
The very thought turned my insides cold. Stupid. That's what I had been to even consider it. I couldn't form words, so I continued my hasty walk toward the dungeon. The king easily fell into step beside me. Damn those long legs.
Is that a yes, then?
I shuddered. No.
Well then, you're headed in the wrong direction, I fear.
I went still as death.
What do you mean?
He grinned a feral smile that made my blood freeze in my veins.
You think I'm going to allow you the luxury of the cell you just slipped out of, when you have no intention of heeding my warnings about escape or accepting my deal? No. I think I'll place you somewhere a little less comfortable.
I went stiff as a corpse. The annex, where all the screams and wails were born. Blood was rushing in my ears as delight at my torment danced in his eyes.
You said you wouldn't.
I sounded like a petulant child, and the words turned to ash on my tongue. He shrugged.
Did I? Must have changed my mind. The stretcher can be very effective, you know.
He was taking too much pleasure for my horrified expression. I hoped he saw how much I hated him, more than I had ever hated anyone, even Powell. You are everything I thought you were, and so much worse. His slate eyes twinkled.
Perhaps so. Still, your pick.
The idea of spending the rest of my life here was enough to make me physically sick. But what were my options, really? Endure whatever he had planned to force me into submission? Images of racks and ripped out fingernails danced in my mind. And then what? I'd be weaker and more traumatized, and even less likely to successfully escape. Wasn't agreeing to stay and letting him at least find my family the better of two evils, and the one that I could more likely work to my advantage?
Fine, I said, biting down on the nausea turning over inside me. But
I swallowed hard. I have a request. The king took a step closer and looked down at me with curiosity. Curiosity and something else. Something hungry. I froze. When I didn't continue, he murmured,
Let's hear it, bird.
You find my family now, not eventually, and deliver a letter to them with proof that they received it, I forced out. His face softened. Done. And you must swear not to harm my brother, I breathed. I am serving his sentence.
Of course, he said, though his mouth soured.
And I want out of the dungeons. If I am going to live here, I cannot sleep in a cell forever. I need to be allowed to roam the castle freely. No more Barney hovering over me.
He looked at me, lethal and unforgiving. Fine. You can have all of your requests. But hear me, bird. You will not run again. If you do, Your family, once I find them, will suffer for it.
Blood leached from my face, but I nodded in silence, as still as death.
It's dangerous out there, he added. If you can believe it, I don't wish to see you harmed.
Despite everything that had happened, I exhaled a long, slow breath. If he kept his word, I would be able to get a message to my family. Maybe I'd even see them again one day, if I behaved.
And if he was lying, I'd know soon enough, when he had no proof of my family's safety, and I could try to escape again then, once I had made him believe I had no intention of doing so.
Still, bitterness coated my tongue. I couldn't help the words that flew from my mouth at him as our eyes met under the twinkling light of the moon. I wish whatever attacked you in the woods had succeeded.
Eyes laced with deadly power gazed back at me. No, you do not.
9.
You're poutier than usual today.
Dagen eyed me, and I shifted to stare sullenly out the window at the woods, thinking of all I had lost in so little time. The chambers I was taken to last night in the servants' quarters were nothing special, but larger than the room Lee and I had shared back in Abington. The thought depressed me for more than a few reasons, but the white linens had been cool on my skin, and a small fireplace emanated a low, temperate heat. Despite my worry that anxiety-driven nightmares would keep me up all night, sleep had come for me, swiftly. Thoughts of darkened dragon scales, bloody fingernails, and careless gray eyes had followed me into a dreamless slumber. Yesterday, I had thought it would be my last afternoon in this apothecary. Now, it was a lifetime. Dagen's tense mood paired well with mine, and the two of us only highlighted the coldness of the castle. While I could appreciate the keep's impressive towers, delicate chandeliers, and expensive textured furniture, all I could think of as I had walked to the apothecary this morning was an entire existence spent here against my will.
I had a long night, I said.
Dagen waited for me to continue. I very much did not want to talk about this, but he also had never cared before to get to know me. If we were to continue working together, I felt like I should take advantage of his interest. I found out someone had been lying to me, and I was roughed up a bit by the lieutenant. I'm fine, though. Maybe I expected the same protective, furious anger that I had felt from the king, but Dagen just continued to watch me, expressionless. He tried to assault me, I said, finding myself looking for an outraged reaction. I wanted to know what Dagen thought of Bert, of King Ravenwood. Was he not upset by this? Did nobody in this stone's forsaken castle have a conscience? But the king stepped in and sentenced him to death. Still nothing. By torture. I glared at the older man. Dagen huffed and closed his book, reaching under the cabinet. Thanks for your concern, I said under my breath. He pulled out a parcel wrapped in burlap and rounded the corner for the door. I must have really been boring him today.
You coming?
I stared at him, stunned. Coming? With him? Where are you going?
Only one way to find out, he said, more bored than anything.
I looked around the apothecary. I was never going to find out more about this castle, this kingdom, stuck in here each day. And if I had learned anything last night, it was that knowledge was power, and I was powerless unless I pushed my fear aside and braved the rest of this keep. I followed him out into the gallery without another question. We strolled silently through the castle, passing corners shrouded in shadow and soldiers speaking in hushed tones. When I felt their inquisitive eyes on me, I sped up to keep closer to the old man. My freedom from Barney's watchful eye felt eerie, almost too good to be true. But I allowed a single splinter of hope to pierce my heart.
Maybe the king intended to keep his promises, and my independence in the castle was the first. Instead of taking the route I had grown so accustomed to, down the sprawling stairs, through the hall of oil paintings, and out the front doors to the dungeon, we made an unexpected left and filed down a hallway dotted with statues. A pale marble woman in the throes of ecstasy, wrapped in sheer fabric, made me blush, while a wolf frozen in obsidian with teeth bared felt almost too lifelike to be art. The passage ended with a wooden door that a single guard opened for us. Misty morning air filled my lungs. We trudged silently down a damp stone staircase until I couldn't hold my unease in any longer. "Where are we going?" Of course, he didn't answer me. I should have expected as much. This staircase led down to a grand lawn behind the castle, vast and emerald green. As I stood at the precipice of the expanse, I took in the wide open space and inhaled dewy pine and freshly cut grass. It reminded me of my morning runs in Abington, though far greener and more damp. My feet squished in the cold lawn as I followed Doggin down through the clearing and noted the way the trees and wildflowers ringed the field walled in stone. It was like an arena. Lost in my appreciation for the textures and colors of the glade, I almost didn't notice Doggin stopping short in the middle of it as he dropped the wrapped parcel in front of me. It landed with a metallic clang. He gestured toward it, my pulse skittering at the invitation. I knelt down slowly to inspect the parcel's contents, and my mouth fell open like a book. Inside were two massive, glittering silver swords. The blades glistened with the early sun, which filtered through the burlap. The grip and pommel of one were covered in intricate metalwork that resembled the vines of a dense forest. I bristled with horror. "What are you going to do to me?" Doggin's brows furrowed. "When I was growing up, what nearly happened to you last night happened to more girls than not, and there weren't any kings around to save them." My blood ran cold as I thought of the girls who had not been as lucky as I had. Was he going to finish where Bert had left off? "I taught the few I could with that same blade." In an instant, fear melted into relief, which gave way to confusion. He walked toward me and lifted both swords, handing the smaller, less elaborate one to me. "We'll start with a basic strike from above. Evenly distribute your body weight between your feet, leading foot in front, and face your opponent." I nodded, but still made no move to lift my sword.
"Any day now."
He was going to teach me? To wield a sword? I wasn't even very good with a butcher knife. But his eyes were shifting from stern to irritated, and with the metal weapon in his hand, I didn't wish to make the old man angry. I tried the stance, and he lifted my elbow slightly.
"Hold your sword at shoulder level." "Good. First, close the line between your opponent and yourself by bringing your sword forward, like this."
He demonstrated for me, his movement fluid like running water.
"Then, step toward your opponent and a little to your right to avoid a counterattack. Then you can bring down your blade in a straight line to strike."
I was mirroring his movements, watching my feet placement, and running through about 100 ways to take the sword and race for the wall behind me that separated us from the woods, when he snapped,
"Now, look alive."
Before I could exhale, he charged me. The man had to be in his 70s, but he moved like a jungle cat. I must have screeched as I dropped my sword like a hotcake and sprinted in the opposite direction. I heard Doggin bark out a genuine laugh before I turned around and stared at him, stupefied. "What in the stones was that?" I gasped.
"Let's try again."
Doggin backed up and waited for me to pick up my sword. This time when he charged at me, I dodged to the left, still holding my sword but dragging it behind me like a dead weight. He really was teaching me, and maybe messing with me a little.
"Good. Hold your sword upright It's a weapon, not a broomstick.
You wouldn't say that if I was a man, I huffed, lifting the sword into the air. Its weight pulled at my wrists and forearms. I would be sore tomorrow.
Dagon repeated the move, but this time when I ducked, he swung the sword back in my direction.
I bobbed and then backed up, but he stayed on me. I continued to skirt his blows, swinging the way he had instructed, but eventually his sword made contact with my shoulder. I braced for pain, but found just a tap in its place. I assumed it took some skill to swing with such precision and vigor, but make sure the blow was slowed just in time.
Good, he breathed. Again.
We continued for the next 40 minutes or so, moving into how to block and the basics of a parry. He corrected my stance, my elbows, the direction my feet pointed. By the end, I was dripping sweat, my face hot and salty. The familiar ache in my muscles, in my joints, was more welcome than I could have anticipated. I hadn't gone this long without running in years, and expelling some of my pent-up energy was almost as calming as healing.
Well done, Dagon conceded as he wrapped up the swords in their parcel. Again tomorrow, same place and time. We'll do this each morning before the apothecary opens.
All right. I wasn't going to fight him when he was quite literally teaching me to defend myself from the very men that kept me in this castle. And the practice had brought me joy. I was terrible at it, but there was something about holding the weapon and moving with it that was invigorating. I pictured ramming my sword into King Ravenwood's arrogant face, and a thrill thrummed in my veins. I fought to catch my breath as we walked back to the castle in oddly comfortable silence. The dark sky above us promised a day of welcome rain, and my overheated body craved it.
Dagon? I asked eventually.
You're a skilled swordsman. What are you doing running an apothecary?
He squinted up at the heavy clouds above us. I was in the Onyx Army, some years back.
I shook my head. No, I've seen soldiers. That was something much more. You're a master.
I had a worthy teacher in my father, he said, looking down.
Well, thank you for trying to teach me. I'll give it the best I've got.
He hiked up the stairs, a grin twitching on his lips. Later, back in the apothecary, I realized that had been the only time I'd ever seen him smile. If I wasn't too sore to walk after a morning spent attempting to outmaneuver a master swordsman, the hike up the stairs to the library was sure to do the trick. Keeping the oath I had made to myself this morning to discover more of the castle and build up a defensive knowledge, I had decided to start somewhere that scared me the least, visiting Mari where she worked. I hoped she might have more information on the king, the seer, and the castle itself. But also, I just liked the girl. When I reached the top of the near-endless stairs, I was met by books upon books sprawled across spirals and rows of shelves. I'd never seen so many of anything in my life. The library was all warm shades of tea and tan, with worn reading desks and antique velvet chairs strewn throughout. By the time I found Mari in the Gnomes and Sprites section, I still had just barely caught my breath.
Hello, I squeaked, irrationally afraid of disturbing the book's peace.
The room felt like a temple, reverent in its silence.
Arwen, she beamed, flitting over to me. I can't believe you actually came up here. It's quite the climb, isn't it? Papa said no job is worth the trudge up those stairs each day, but I don't mind.
The view must be unbelievable way up here. Mari gave a knowing smile and walked us over to one of the stained glass windows that looked down onto the forest below. The pines and oaks looked even more foreboding from above, filtered through the colored glass. Acres upon acres of deep, crisp greens and gloomy black. A crack of thunder made me jump, and Mari turned, getting a better look at me.
What's with you? You look terrible.
I slumped against the window.
Thanks.
She leaned even closer, inspecting my face.
Ugh, and you're sweaty.
This is going to sound bizarre, I started, but realized I wasn't sure how to finish the sentence. If I was going to live here, at least for the time being, I needed one person I could open up to. Last night had been... I couldn't sit alone with all the feelings much longer.
Yes, she prompted, going back to putting books away.
Pushing off the glass, I followed her and scanned the library. An older, bespectacled woman was reading in a corner to our left, and two men who looked like generals were perusing the maps section. Keeping my voice low, I started small to test her out. I spent the morning learning to sword fight with Dagon. Mari whirled to face me.
What? Why?
And here was the hard part. Could I trust Mari? My instincts were never this strong, and they were pushing me to open up to her. She had only ever been kind to me, sought out my friendship, tried to make the transition, though she didn't know the whole truth of it, easier for me. I blew out a breath. I came here because my brother was going to be sentenced to death for theft, and I offered to work as a healer to pay off his debt. I spent my first night in the castle dungeon, and the king was in the adjoining cell, pretending to be a prisoner in his own keep. When her face contorted, I cut in. I would tell you why if I knew.
You met King Cain Ravenwood? And spoke to him? What was he like?
Horrible, I snapped, and miserably handsome. An awful combination. Mari laughed. That does seem to be the consensus throughout the kingdom. How does that lead to a sword fight with Dagon? I told Mari everything. King Ravenwood's lies, the awful lieutenant, my attempt to run, our wretched agreement, and my exchange with Dagon this morning. I told her of my mother, my siblings, my childhood in Abington. Everything except for Powell's abuse. Mari sagged against a tall bookcase beside me. She actually seemed at a loss for words for the first time since I had met her.
I'm so sorry you're stuck here, she finally said. Shadowhold isn't that bad, though. It'll grow on you, I'm sure of it. I'm even more sorry about your mother's ailment. I can't imagine what it would be like to see Papa suffer like that.
My heart hurt when I thought of my mother, attempting a journey to safer lands in her condition, and without her medicine, as I never made it back with it that night. The healers in my town weren't ever able to figure out what it was. We tried every single potion, ointment, and therapy we knew. Eventually, they told me to stop trying to heal her and just keep her comfortable while we waited for the inevitable. I thought back to the day Nora gave me the stern talking to. I had never felt so defeated.
I am so sorry, Arwen. At least your small town had a healer. There are many who have to travel for medical help. In Serpent Spring, on the border of Peridot, there aren't any healers for miles. Once a man had his arm lopped off by a windmill and had to be flown via Wyvern to Willow Ridge. Why he was up there, I don't care to know.
Mari, how do you even know that?
I read it in a medical text, she shrugged. This woman was a wealth of knowledge.
My breath caught in my throat. A medical text. Could that be it? I searched the shelves around me until I saw it and made a beeline for the section marked medicine. Our small town had none of the resources of this castle, such as a library like this that must have been imported from the bustling capital, and surely other cities over the decades, too.
How could I have been so stupid to only think of this now?
I said to Mari, who trailed behind, it should have been my first thought in a castle such as this one.
Think of what?
Mari called after me, before being met with a loud hush from the woman in spectacles. But I had already found what I was looking for, row after row on various illnesses, ailments, and their cures. If there was anything that could help my mother, it was within these pages. It wasn't even as terrible a plan as some of my others this week had been. Do a decent job here, heal the soldiers, learn to fight, and all the while, hunt for a cure for my mother. Once I found it, I could insist King Ravenwood get it to her, or I'd threaten to stop working for him.
Mari,
I spun to her, true hope alight in my chest for the first time since I left Abington. Will you help me? I know it's a lot, but there are three things I love in this world. Reading, a challenge, and proving others wrong. I laughed, bright and loud. And helping people? Sure, she shrugged. That too. The afternoon had crept into night as we flipped through over half the books in the section, when my eyes had become so tired of medical jargon that I could barely hold them in a squint, and we hadn't found anything of use. I stood on wobbly knees and promised Mari I'd come back tomorrow morning before my work in the apothecary. Then I made the treacherous walk down the stone stairs. When I reached the hallway of oil paintings, I spontaneously turned right, inspired by my dedication to leave no stone in the castle unturned. Actively exploring the castle in pursuit of any knowledge that could help me had felt much better than cowering in the apothecary. The new, darkened hallway was aglow with iron candlesticks and chandeliers, and I willed myself to be brave. Shadows couldn't hurt me. Neither could ornate stonework or hushed whispers from hidden alcoves. 1 foot in front of the other, that was all I had to do. At the end of the winding passage stood lofty, night-dark doors that were flanked by 4 sentries. A curse bellowed through them and into the hall, stunning me and stealing the air from my lungs. That low voice was all too familiar, and I couldn't help the undiluted terror that pinched in my gut at the sound. Even the guards in their leather-harnessed armor and skull-like helmets flinched. Every cell in my body urged me to run in the other direction, away from that lethal roar. But maybe I could hear another snippet of the king's struggles with the seer if I stood by and listened. I'd just take a few steps closer. The massive black stone doors swung open, and a sobbing, blubbering mess stormed out and barreled directly into me. I stumbled backward, my ankle rolling in on itself. Vengeful bloody monster is going to get every last one of us fucking killed. The force of the whimpering man nearly sent me to the ground. He was huge, at least 6 feet tall, built like a stack of bricks, and sniveling like an overtired toddler. I was not going to stick around to find out what King Ravenwood had done to reduce this mountain of a human into a puddle of tears. I turned on my heel before hearing the king's voice boom out into the corridor. Well, look who it is. Shit. Despite the acid burning in my veins, I knew better than to run away from him. The looming threat of the dungeon was only a fraction of what he was capable of. I turned and lifted my chin. Walking into King Ravenwood's throne room was like stepping inside a thundercloud. Black and gray stonework made the room feel cavernous, and the twisted throne he sat upon was a monolith of carved black vines. Torches lit the room in columns of flickering light, but there was no hiding the harshness of the space, which was only amplified by the king's dark expression. I forced a simple curtsy at King Ravenwood's feet, despite the way it soured my stomach. He arched a single brow, his usually sparkling eyes weary this evening.
What were you doing out there? Miss me already?
So, not such an insightful king, I mumbled. I really had to get a lid on my anger, but I couldn't help the fire that raged inside of me every time he spoke. And today was especially painful. He was in such a position of power. Legs spread, jaw relaxed, a hand adorned in silver rings slung casually over one arm of his throne. The self-satisfied prick was practically begging for my barbs. But the guards behind him fell deadly quiet, and I recognized the blonde soldier who'd snapped at me in the infirmary as he stepped forward with lethal intent, his green eyes promising murder. I swallowed, considering the stoic young soldier. He had chased his own king down that day, though Ravenwood hadn't actually been an escaped prisoner. Why had he run after him?
You may want to watch your tongue, King Ravenwood drawled. Commander Griffin can be a little sensitive about name-calling.
Commander? The man looked awfully young to be the commander of the Onyx Army. I understood a young king, like Ravenwood, likely 25 or 26. Royalty had no control over when their parents passed, leaving the crown to them. But Commander Griffin looked to be about the king's age. I wondered how he had risen within the ranks so quickly. The man in question rolled his eyes, but kept his stance next to the king, watching me as if I were a threat. The thought made me smirk.
Something funny to you, Bird?
Not in the slightest, I said, schooling my face. If anything, the mood seems quite somber. The king rolled up the ornate sleeves of his black shirt and crossed an ankle over his knee. His forearms were golden from sun and corded with lean muscle as they rested on either side of him.
If you must know, it's been a horrible fucking day.
Tragic, I mused. Not rude, but not polite either. His answering smile was feral, and the wooden arms of his throne groaned beneath his grip. When had I become so bold?
So easy for you to mock, isn't it? When you know absolutely nothing about what is going on around you. When you have so little awareness of the sacrifices kings and queens have to make for their subjects, the lives lost, the choices that can't be reversed.
I tried not to scoff as anger built inside me. He was waging a war on one of the feeblest kingdoms in all of Evendel. He was a bully, not a martyr. I struggled to find sympathy, I admitted through clenched teeth. I needed to leave this room before I said something I regretted. But the king's expression only intensified, simmered under thick, furrowed brows.
You have no idea how dangerous things are becoming. How precarious is the fate of every single person that you know, that you've ever met, that you love.
I scowled at his attempts to scare me, but couldn't stop the shiver that slipped down my spine. So tell me, I said, what's really at stake for you, King Ravenwood? Or are you scared that I might know the truth, that the only thing that matters to you is your own greed? His face hardened into a mask of cruel calm, and he stood, stalking closer. I fought the urge to flinch as his face drew near my own, and he murmured in my ear.
Firstly, you may call me Cain. King Ravenwood is a little formal from someone I've made blush as many times as you.
Punishing embarrassment burned my cheeks. The guards behind the king shifted. I opened my mouth to protest his outrageous claim, but he continued.
Secondly, Arwen. Having only lived a tiny, suffocatingly safe life for 20 years, never having seen anything, been anywhere, felt any man, what could you possibly know at all?
Without a second thought, I reared back and the flat of my palm connected with his smug, male face. I waited in still silence for his anger, his fury. But King Ravenwood had the audacity to look oddly pleased, a strange smile spreading across his face. As soon as the stark noise had resonated through the room, Commander Griffin was behind me and had my arms in a vice grip. A wave of panic crashed inside my chest, and my heart slammed against my throat. I yanked away in earnest, but the commander was absurdly strong and pulled me backward. His rough hands dug into my skin.
"Unhand her," the king snapped, rubbing his jaw and turning back to his throne. "She's nothing more than a nuisance."
His words stung. I hoped the slap had, too. How dare he throw my own words back at me? Words I had shared with him in confidence when I had thought he was someone else. It was a low blow, aimed to elicit a response from me. The commander did as he was told and let me go without another word. "Can I leave?" I asked the king, trying not to sound like Lee when she wanted to be excused from supper.
"By all means," the king said and gestured toward the door.
I raced back to my bedroom in the servants' quarters, shame and rage warring inside me.
I couldn't believe I had stooped to his level. I crawled under a woven blanket, the firm mattress dipping slightly under my sore limbs. The day had started so promisingly, with Dagen and Mari and my new outlook, the first ray of light in a never-ending chasm of darkness that had enveloped my life. And now I just wanted it all to be over. Again. Try as I might to fight it, the king's words had struck a chord of shame in me, so sensitive, so personal, it had felt almost invasive, like he could see right through me and had reached inside my hollow ribcage to fish around for the thoughts I had hidden in the deepest corners of my heart. I had started to resent my home in Abington, all the ways my life there had underserved me, and I still hated Shadowhold, even more now that I knew I'd likely be here forever. It didn't leave many options for anywhere I truly belonged. Somehow, despite the many long, empty days of my childhood, or the recent nights spent in a leaky stone cell, I had never felt more alone. 10. Dear Mother, Lee, and Ryder, if you are receiving this letter, it means you are finally somewhere safe, and maybe warm, surrounded by exotic foods and fruits, or is that just my grumbling stomach talking? I wish we could be together, but just know I'm taken care of in Onyx. It's a long story that I hope to tell you all in person one day. In the meantime, please use this coin to help build your new lives. Knowing Ryder, half the sack he stole is likely gone already. Lee, don't let all this change frighten you. I know that leaving Abington was hard, but as long as you are with Ryder and Mother, you are still home. Mother, I am searching this new kingdom for any information on your illness that I can find. Don't lose hope. And Ryder, please take care of them. They need you. All of my love, Arwen. I had been carrying the letter